Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website nativeground.com. Well, to start out the new year correctly, let's start with a banjo joke. Question number one, how many banjo jokes are there? Is the answer one? Or is it B, 57 and counting? Or is it C, over 160 if you include all languages? So, how many banjo jokes are there anyway? And question number two, what's the name of the song based on a poem by Scottish writer Robert Burns back in 1788 and popularized by Guy Lombardo and his band back in 1929? Name of the song, Scottish writer Robert Burns, 1788. The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January the 1st. Well, it was on this very day back in 1941, that the Andrews Sisters recorded Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy in 1941, today. And it was 55 years ago today, 1966, that the final episode of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet with Ricky Nelson was filmed. 1966, today, 55 years ago.
They say that all good things must end. Someday, autumn leaves must fall. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No.
Chad and Jeremy performing A Summer Song introduces our folk music news. Chad Stewart dies at 79. Half of Chad and Jeremy, hit-making duo. This is published in Deadline.com on the 23rd of December, 2020, by Greg Evans. Chad Stewart, who, as half of the hit British invasion duo Chad and Jeremy, had a string of whispery folk pop hits in the mid-1960s that included Yesterday's Gone and A Summer Song, died the hospital on December the 20th of pneumonia after a fall at his home in Haley, Idaho. He was 79.
No.
With their guitars and pleasant, if not exactly traditional, teen idol faces, Chad Stewart, distinguished by his trademark black rim eyeglasses, and Jeremy Clyde, friends since their undergraduate days at London's Central School of Speech and Drama, scored big during the first rush of the Beatles-inspired British invasion of America. The duo's 1963 Stewart-penned UK hit, Yesterday's Gone, made the U.S. charts, and the wistful A Summer Song, co-written by Stewart, was even more successful, hitting the top 10 on U.S. charts, the most successful in a series of hits that also included Willow Weep for Me and Distant Shores. So popular were their hits and amiable their personalities that Chad and Jeremy became a sort of go-to for American TV series looking to tap into the British invasion phenomenon. In 1965, the duo made appearances on The Dick Van Dyke Show and The Patty Duke Show. In the next year, they appeared in episodes of Batman in 1966, in which the evil Catwoman stole their voices and blackmailed the UK with fears of massive tax losses due to their silenced voices. Also in 1966, they appeared on the Western series Laredo. And in the following year, 1967, Stewart lent his voice to Disney's The Jungle Book as the Beatlesque Mop Top Flap the Vulture. Chad and Jeremy disbanded in 1968, with Stewart continuing in the music industry and touring, and Clyde building a busy career as an actor on stage and British television, up to and including Downton Abbey. The duo would reunite occasionally over the years for concerts and nostalgia package tours. The world has lost a legend today, Chad Stewart of Chad and Jeremy, but his voice will continue to touch our lives through his music. Nessun Dorma introduces our classical music news. It's an article entitled Stupid Questions with Josh Groban. The multi-platinum selling Golden Voice baritone returns with Harmony, November the 20th. But can he sing his way out of this comedic jam? This is written by Dan Sneerson, published in Entertainment Weekly on December 2020 issue. Harmony features you and Sarah Bareilles duetting on Both Sides Now. You hosted the Tonys with her. Let's hear the pitch for your buddy comedy. We're turning the odd couple on its head with the cod couple. We work in a deli undercover as music piracy litigators. Our catchphrase would be, sing like a canary or sleep with the fishes, before pulling a lawsuit out of a sturgeon or something. You're offering a series of virtual live stream concerts this fall. Between us, how lit are those backstage parties going to be? Well, the backstage parties are not so dissimilar from your aunt's boozy Zoom brunch. We'll stay online and we open up 10 or 11 bottles of rosé, and sometimes there's an erotic book club that starts to develop. How many escalator and hot air balloon companies have asked you to sing You Raise Me Up? Pretty much only Viagra at this point. Noel was 2007's best-selling album. How did it go when you called Akon, Beyoncé, Daughtry, Nickelback, and Hannah Montana soundtrack to rub it in? Well, everyone couldn't have been more gracious. Tell us how we can sell 5 million Christmas albums in 2 months. I'm saying, Beyoncé, Beyoncé, I'm sure you'll be okay. And finally, there are metal covers of your songs. You love System of a Down. What's the most metal thing you did today? I went out to check my mail without shoes on. It's safe to say some dirt got trailed into the house and my feet are filthy. When you just don't give a damn when you're living that life, sometimes you go to check the mail and you're like, no shoes. You know what I mean? Anyway, my fans get it. This Power Music Workout mix of the song Bad Girls addresses our pandemic adjustment and technology question. How you gonna keep that annual New Year's resolution to get more exercise during a quarantine? From speakeasy gyms to exercise bubbles, here are some ways the pandemic has drastically altered fitness and exercise as we know it. This is written by Bethany Biron on the 29th of August, 2020, in BusinessInsider.com. In an effort to stay fit and sane in these trying times, Americans have become especially innovative when it comes to finding ways to exercise during the pandemic. With quarantines and stay-at-home mandates prompting temporary closures at many gym chains and fitness boutiques around the country, Americans have turned to new ways to get their blood a-pumping. Some are equipping their own at-home studios with Peloton bikes and Nordic Track treadmills, leading to massive sales booms and weeks-long back orders, while others are unfurling their yoga mats and queuing up virtual streaming classes from their favorite instructors. In areas where gyms have started to slowly reopen to the public, companies are enforcing new policies including mandating masks, reducing capacity, and enhancing sanitizing, while others are ignoring protocols altogether and defying state mandates at speakeasy gyms. This article points out that exercise equipment we used to take for granted, like dumbbells, exercise bikes, treadmills, rowing machines, and outdoor bicycles, are now almost impossible to find. And while some gyms have reopened under strict safety protocols, others have gone underground, offering what NPR has recently labeled speakeasy gyms, where members can ignore personal inconveniences like social distancing. Meanwhile, fitness apps have skyrocketed in popularity, as have online exercise and yoga classing. Outside exercise is also creatively adapting to the pandemic by offering clear, half-dome bubbles in which to exercise and encouraging good old-fashioned activities like running. Finally, among fitness buffs and couch potatoes alike, athletic apparel sales are booming. So there's no reason not to meet your usual New Year's resolutions in 2021. Swap your work attire for comfortable clothes and get those beats per minute rising in new, creative ways. BTS, Fly to My Room, from their 2020 B album. Introduce our rock and pop music news. It's an article entitled Entertainer of the Year, BTS. In a year when live music went quiet, they became the biggest band in the world. This is written by Risa Bruner and published in Time Magazine, 28th of December, 2020 issue. It's late October and Suga is sitting on a couch strumming a guitar. His feet are bare, his long hair falling over his eyes. He noodles around, testing out chords and muttering softly to himself, silver hoop earrings glinting in the light. "I just started learning a few months ago," he says. "It's an intimate moment, the kind you'd spend with a new crush in a college dorm room while they confess rock star ambitions." But Suga is 1/7 of the Korean pop band BTS, which means I'm just one of millions of fans watching, savoring the moment. BTS isn't just the biggest K-pop act on the charts. They've become the biggest band in the world, full stop. Between releasing multiple albums, breaking every type of record, and appearing in these extemporaneous live streams in 2020, BTS ascended to the zenith of pop stardom, and they did it in a year defined by setbacks, one in which the world hit pause and everyone struggled to maintain their connections. Other celebrities tried to leverage this year's challenges. Most failed. Remember that star-studded Imagine video? But BTS's bonds to their international fan base called ARMY deepened amid the pandemic, a global racial reckoning, and worldwide shutdowns. There are times when I'm still taken aback by all the unimaginable things that are happening, Suga tells Time later. But I ask myself, who's going to do this if not us? Today, K-pop is a multi-million dollar business, but for decades, the gatekeepers of the music world, the Western radio moguls, media outlets, and number crunchers, treated it as a novelty. The article skips down, ends with this. Devotion is a point of pride for BTS, particularly in a year when so much has felt uncertain. We're not sure if we've actually earned respect, but one thing for sure is that people feel like, okay, this is not just some kind of syndrome, a phenomena. He searches for the right words. These little boys from Korea are doing this. And in local music news, we have this article entitled, Music at the Crossroads. This is written by David Menconi and published in Our State Magazine, September 2020. For nearly a century, North Carolina singers and songwriters have built careers busking for tips in the great outdoors. At these five spots, the kindness of strangers has helped fund some of our most enduring classics. In their early years of making music, brothers Scott and Seth Avett would go looking for an audience wherever they could find one. They'd hoist an upright piano into the beds of Scott's old 1971 Ford pickup truck and drive around North Carolina, performing in parking lots from Wilmington to Asheville, or they'd set up shop on the streets of downtown Charlotte near their hometown, Concord, and play for tips from bankers on their lunch hour. Few paid much attention, but within a decade, the Avett brothers would be performing for sell-out crowds around the world. The Avetts adopted the tradition of busking because many of their North Carolina musical forebears started out that way, picking and singing between shifts at the mill or the tobacco warehouse or the local diner. While most sidewalk buskers remain anonymous, some of them, from the Deep Gap-born flat picker Doc Watson to Durham bluesman Blind Boy Fuller to more contemporary artists like the Avetts, became American music pioneers. The settings of the busking spots where those artists have performed, on the sides of the streets from Charlotte to Durham to Boone, played an integral part in the sounds that the players went on to create. Watson's songs like Omi Wise and Tom Dooley drew from Appalachian folktales. Fuller's working man blues reflected the frustration of Durham's Depression-era factory laborers, and the Avett brothers' early statement of purpose, the traveling song, vowed, I will travel till my country home is found. Even the smallest towns around our state have areas where musicians gather to play and people huddle around to listen. In the following five spots, musicians have made history, or they will someday. There's the Liberty Warehouse, 530 Foster Street in Durham, at which blind boy Fuller used to busk. The warehouse is where Piedmont farmers would bring their fall harvest in to sell. The warehouse owner certainly didn't mind the extra publicity that the singers provided. Few gave thought to the importance of Fuller and his fellow buskers like the Reverend Gary Davis, whose songs would later be covered by the Rolling Stones and the Grateful Dead, or Sonny Terry, who performed with Woody Guthrie, or Floyd Council, who inspired the name of the rock group Pink Floyd. The other four sites Menconi discusses are the Spray Mercantile Building in Eden, North Carolina, the Doc Watson Just One of the People statue in Boone, North Carolina, the Flatiron Sculpture in Asheville, North Carolina, and the Wells Fargo Atrium in Charlotte, North Carolina. Music at the Crossroads. So, how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, how many banjo jokes are there? Is it A, 1, B, 57 and counting, C, over 160 if you include all languages? Correct answer, according to nativeground.com, is answer A. There is only one banjo joke total. As noted by Wayne Erbson, maybe you've heard the one about, why was the banjo player staring at the bottle of orange juice? Because it said concentrate. The fact is, people love making jokes about banjos and the people who play them. These banjo jokes have taken over where the moron, blonde, and lawyer jokes left off. What is it about the banjo that makes it the brunt of so many jokes? To answer this question, we need to take a little trip back to 1843. At that time, minstrel music was just taking root, and it soon surged in popularity to become America's first national musical obsession. Minstrel bands performed everywhere, from concert stages in the north to the gold fields of California, on the decks of Mississippi River boats, and in the camps of Civil War soldiers. At the core of minstrel music was the five-string banjo. To understand minstrel music and the banjo's place in it, we must remember that minstrels were not just performing music. Instead, they were part of an entire stage show consisting of rowdy dancing, boisterous singing and playing, biting humor, and outrageous skits. Of course, minstrel shows were done with the performers wearing loosely fitting ragamuffin garments, oversized shoes, and slouch hats. With the banjo's prominent place in minstrel music, it's no wonder that the banjo was forever linked to the comic character depicted in the minstrel show. The banjo's role in the 1972 movie Deliverance didn't improve that characterization. Bluegrass music also is typically rather sentimental, with themes of dead mothers, dying orphans, and widows waiting for their lost sons to come home. Unfortunately for banjo players, the sentimentality of bluegrass music has splashed on them, making them seem overly sentimental too. How many banjo players, for instance, does it take to screw in a light bulb? 5. 1 to screw it in, and 4 to lament about how much they miss the old one. And finally, after all this research, Erbson concludes there is really only one banjo joke, because the rest are all true stories. And the answer to our second question, what is the name of the song based on a poem by Scottish writer Robert Burns back in 1788 and popularized by Guy Lombardo and his band back in 1929? Well, as noted by Caitlin Schneider on 1231.18 and mentalfloss.com, every New Year's Eve after the champagne has been popped, the ball has dropped, and everyone is feeling very merry indeed. Revelers queue up for the same song they've been queuing up for decades. You know the one. It makes you cry, even though you don't understand it and know almost none of the words. A handful of options pop up when you search for the meaning of Auld Lang Syne, including Old Time's Sake. Beyond the words themselves, there's even less agreement about exactly how the tune came to be a New Year's Eve tradition. The song originated as a poem, but It's safe to say that the Auld Lang Syne we know today is some combination of an old poem and Burns' creative input. Originally, the song had a more traditional folk sound. How then did a Scottish folk song with a murky providence and nothing at all to do with New Year's Eve become associated with the holiday? It's largely thanks to bandleader Guy Lombardo. In 1929, Lombardo and his band played Auld Lang Syne as traditional transitional music while performing at New York City's Roosevelt Hotel during a New Year's Eve broadcast. It was played just after midnight and heard over radio and television airwaves, inadvertently spawning a global tradition. Today, Auld Lang Syne is one of the most recognizable songs around the world, where it's played at funerals, celebrations, and as a warning that closing time is approaching at stores throughout Japan. So don't worry too much about the meaning. It's really just about old friends. So let's bid adieu to today's program and 2020, and welcome old friends to 2021 with Mariah Carey's cover of this Scottish folk song, Auld Lang Syne. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time, and Happy New Year.